behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I've been. We are joined, as always, with our super producers, Noel, the Resurrectionist Brown, and Dylan, nicknamed TBA Fagan.
You saying he's a resurrection man?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
a resurrectionist, but resurrection man is a great term.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hope not. I hope that's not what he's doing. After hours or whatever. But where does he go?
Where does he go?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever used a driving service like Lyft or Uber or something?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. When do you find yourself using them to like go to concerts or like venues or
never locally. It's always when I'm traveling.
Okay, so we're in a strange city.
Yeah, it replaces a rental car in some cases.
Right, and it can be much more affordable depending on the kind of rental car lifestyle you are accustomed
to. Yeah, so you're a user of these services, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's easy for me to link up with a friend or parking, and I live downtown, parking is pretty challenging here. And I have a spot. You know, I've got all my strategies about where to put my car. I'm driving the Monte Carlo again for a little while, by the way. And if I am in the home base area, I will park the car in a safe spot, which is kind of also hard to find in my part of town. And I'll walk a lot because it's exercise. But if I'm going somewhere where transportation is required and it's in town and there isn't decent parking, by which I also mean affordable,
mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, man, $4 for an Uber ride is going to be way cheaper than $15 to park.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or even a valet service or something where, you know, you get a tip at the end or whatever.
Yeah,
and
Yeah. Not
only that, I get a lot of anxiety about parking downtown. I mean, I'm thinking about it before I leave my house up in the suburbs. Like, if I'm headed down here for an event or to a restaurant or whatever it would be, I'm honestly, like, just going through my head, like, what's in the area? How tight is that parking structure going to be?
Yeah.
If it is a valet-only thing, you know, is there a self-parking option available? And if so, how tight is that going
to
be?
Where are my $2 to $5?
It's crowded.
Cash.
Yeah, exactly, right. So, yeah. So I know that you're a much more frequent user of that type of thing than I am.
I do find myself in situations where it just financially is a better choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like any other ride service, the people who drive are typically pretty interesting, too. So it's entertaining to hear their stories. You know, to always hear, like, what's the craziest fare you ever had? What's the weirdest thing you said? Stuff like that.
Oh,
people
sure.
are pretty forthcoming.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting to talk to, in the past, taxi drivers. But now mm-hmm. it's the Uber drivers, the Lyft drivers, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that come in contact with everybody.
And I bet you, ladies and gentlemen, some of you out in the audience have driven taxi cabs in the past or present, and many may be driving Uber or Lyft or some other equivalent service now.
Yeah, might be listening to this podcast while they're driving for that service.
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. If you are, I want to go ahead and preemptively ask you to send us an email with your stories, because we are all ears, or in this case, eyes. But you get the gist.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I mean, I bet we can get some unusual stuff and then probably some more. For the most part, I bet it's kind of a vanilla job, you know, like for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, like 99% of the fares are the normal, I need to get across town type thing. But then there's that one time, you know, one out of 100, where it's really something unusual, something strange happens on the way, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, someone hops in and they're dressed as if they're like they're dressed in like a three-piece conservative suit, and then partway through the ride, they ask if you would like to see their jar of teeth.
You know? Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah. Like, did you know that I'm the tooth fairy?
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
So they say it in a reasonable voice. That's the scariest. All right. So the thing is that a lot of these rideshare services seem set to continue. They're growing. You know, and people have their favorites and people have their problems with certain ones, but they're not only growing, they're evolving in the service they deliver. And something that we've been hearing a lot about is the rise of autonomous vehicles and mm-hmm. like self-driving vehicles in this kind of field.
Sure. Yeah. So autonomy, and we're seeing just the very hints of this, the very beginnings of this whole thing. It's going to come through in waves. We're not anywhere close to fully autonomous vehicles for everyday use for everybody at this point. We're still, I mean, they love to say a decade out, but it's probably a little bit longer than that.
Maybe a decade in some European countries.
Maybe.
But the U.S. is huge.
And we're talking like full-on autonomous vehicles. I mean, no driver input at all, really, other than here's where I need to go. We have right now what we have is kind of like the in-between. It's like the early baby steps version of the whole thing. So we've covered so many of these advancements along the way, and I like every time we talk about this, I like to say that, you remember how when we started this podcast, it was back in 2008, I think it was.
Oh man!
And we were convinced that there's just no way that self-driving cars would be around, and then the whole world changed. Really, I mean, that fast. Yeah. We've only been doing that. We've been doing this for 9 years. I say only. That's a long time, but it's changed so much that, of course, I mean, you can't say that you're a believer. I mean, it's happening right now. It's really happening.
And this is the subject of our episode. It's pretty tough to predict the future, no matter how easy your local Madam Bell or whatever makes it sound. The issue here is that with such a profound change or potential for change, there also come many, we don't have to call them consequences, but let's call them results or ripples. These things are part and parcel of such a big change, and a lot of people have not considered fully a lot of things. Today our podcast is about something that you came to me with that I had never thought of.
I had neither until I read this article, and it was something that I thought was interesting enough to bring to this audience because it'll make you think. I mean, this brings up a moral and ethical dilemma as well. You know, we'll talk about this as we go through, and I want to kind of put it out there, let people kind of digest it and have more time to think about it than we have probably, and piece this together in your head, and then get back to us with your comments and tell us what you think about what we're going to discuss today, because we're not going to say which way we're really for here at this point, I don't think. Again, there's some moral and ethical stuff that will come up as the topic comes around, but this is the strangest thing, Ben. No one has really thought about this, or somebody has. This comes from an article in Slate.com, and the headline is a grabber. It says, "Self-driving cars will make organ shortages even worse." And I hadn't thought about this, but they're talking about organ donors from automobile accidents.
Yeah.
And there's already a shortage of organs for people on waiting lists, and we'll talk about numbers in a moment here.
Yeah.
But the idea is, and this is not giving anything away, but the idea is that self-driving cars are safer cars, generally.
Right.
Less driver error or no driver error, and that means less fatalities, and that means less organs available for those people on the list.
Because a lot of times the circumstances of a fatal accident in an automobile will lend themselves very well to the requirements needed, the requirements, rather, that an organ has to meet to be transplantable.
Yeah.
If transplantable is a word, and if I didn't just churchify that.
No, I think that's a good word. I think it's a good word. But they're already, I mean, we're already at the point where we have shortages of organs.
Mm-hmm.
And people are kicked off the list, and people are denied organs for various reasons. But one of them is that there's no organs available. So, this will complicate matters, and it's just an angle that I hadn't really thought about. And we're going to walk through this this article a bit, and I'm going to read a little bit from here, but also we're going to discuss a little bit. And then again, I really just want the audience to think about this, cuz it's so intriguing to me. This thought.
So tune in, ladies and gentlemen, because we have statistics, we have some anecdotes, we have some what-if-ery on the way, and we'll dive right into it after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back, and Ben, I think we should just jump right into this article because it's got some intriguing ideas and some, I'll tell you right now, I don't agree with some of the stuff that's in this article, the way it's stated, maybe.
This is a controversial issue.
It really is, and again, think about this on your own time and then get back to us. We'd love it. So here's where it starts. It starts out talking about the very first organ transplant, mm-hmm. the first successful one. The first successful recorded kidney transplant was back in 1954. But ever since that point, we've had shortages because people want these organs. People need these organs, mm-hmm. really. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a limited number of donors available. And for many reasons, people, again, get deemed not ill enough to make the list or get kicked off the list because they become too ill and can't receive the organ. It won't mm-hmm. do any good at that point. There's just a lot of reasons that you might be kicked off of the list. But that list is growing.
Right. Currently, around 6,500 U.S. residents die waiting on an organ transplant each year, and that's not counting the other 4,000 that are removed from the waiting list because they are deemed not even for moral or ethical reasons, just because they are ill. Their hardware, the other hardware, if you want to look at it like a vehicle, the other hardware is too physiologically damaged for it to be worth the time. By way of comparison, this would be an equivalent death toll to 22 jumbo jets crashing every year.
Holy cow.
Just to put it in perspective.
Wow. Now, I've got a little bit more information about the list itself.
Yeah.
Now, since 1999, this is so going back 18 years from right now, the waiting list has doubled in size. So it was in 1999 about 65,313 people looking for an organ of some sort, and it is now the current waiting list is 123,000. Now, most of that is liver and kidney donations because liver and kidney disease kills more people than breast cancer or prostate cancer. And the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, says that, you know, the incidence of these chronic diseases is going to rise and the need for more organs is going to continue to trend upwards. So we're going to continue to need more and more livers and kidneys for people. You know, I know there's other organs that are transplanted too, you know,
sure,
heart, lungs,
hearts,
things like that.
Eyes,
but liver,
cornea.
Well, exactly. But liver and kidneys are mm-hmm. the number one thing. And we'll talk more about those in specific in just a moment here. But
sure.
But how do the self-driving cars factor into this? Now, we already kind of hinted at this whole thing, and maybe not the self-driving yet. Let's just talk about how cars factor into this whole thing.
Okay.
It's not something that I had really put together, and I don't know why I hadn't, because, you know, when you go to the DMV or, you know, whatever your driver service place is, they always ask you if you want to be an organ donor every time.
And sometimes they'll kick a little off the price of your processing
fee.
Right?
Well, they will.
They used to in some places.
I don't know if that's still possible or still true or not. That's interesting. Huh.
Well, you know, I'm thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent, right? With an emphasis on the first. So the idea to me of, I remember being a young driver and seeing, I can't remember if in my state it was something where you got a discount or if it was just vote your conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember one time there was a reduced fee and then another time there was not. And when there was not a reduced fee, I said, you know what? I'm going to be a safer driver. I'm going to keep all these bits of me together in this one Ben Bolin thing. I don't need to be part of someone else's life just yet.
In the one Ben Bolin bowl.
Yeah, exactly, right? We'll keep it with the original packaging.
Well, the truth about this whole thing is that automobiles and people that die in automobile wrecks are one of the most reliable sources for healthy organs. They count on organs and tissues coming from drivers that are killed in these accidents, and that's horrific to think about. But each year, every single year in the United States, 35,000 people are killed in automobile accidents.
Yes, and one in five organ donations comes from the victim of an accident, accident.
So one in five. So we're counting. This is 20%. That's a pretty big percentage, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you consider all the other ways that you can expire. That's a huge group of donors that, you know, potential donors, I should say. They're always potential donors until the event actually happens, right? So with the understanding that 20% come from this source, mm-hmm. which is drivers, and drivers are, well, I guess maybe in fatalities. I got a number here that I'm looking for right now as we're talking, but I think it's something like, oh, and I found it, Ben. It's 94%. So an estimated 94% of motor vehicle accidents involve some kind of driver error.
Now, before we continue, I don't want to get too far away from this. Let's just spell out the reason the somewhat morbid and gory reason that accident victims are so valuable for organ donation.
Okay.
Here's the reasoning. So roads are actively monitored by emergency services, mm-hmm. by law enforcement, firefighters, EMTs, and so on. And this means that if a fatality occurs, there are going to be people, professionals on the scene who can transport someone, or in some cases even keep them alive long enough, doing their best, of course, not organ harvesting, doing their best to save the person. And that, just that presence severely reduces the amount of time needed to move this out. So it's all ultimately a question of time of death.
So typically someone will roll up on a scene within minutes of the accident happening, and that means that the organs are still viable for transplantation, right? That means that they're able to safely do that. It's kind of, there's an expiration point where, you know, the blood flow hasn't been to this organ for X number of minutes, and it's no longer safe to use and or for use in somebody else. But yeah, that's a good point that, you know, it's so quick that that somebody is on top of that scene. So what we're talking about, though, is we're talking about preventable fatalities. So these are the ones that, you know, 94% involve driver error. That means that the problem is with, you know, you and I behind the wheel.
Didn't look left, didn't look right.
Yeah.
Didn't check the light.
And theoretically, I always have to say theoretically with these, but theoretically, autonomous vehicles won't do that. Now, I know we've heard of instances where that does happen, but consider that, you know, weigh that against the number of driver mistakes that you see on the road just on the way home tonight from work or from school or wherever you're going to and from. You're going to see a lot of accidents that are, of course, you know, human-caused error. You know, there's a mistake that was made by the driver. So they're saying if you remove that part, that element of this, that factor, then it's going to greatly reduce the number of fatalities on the road, and it's also going to reduce the number of available organs. So right away, I mean, we're almost cutting nearly 20% of the pool, I guess, of organs that are available or thought to be available each year,
right?
You know, based on the stats that we already know. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just an oversimplification of it. You know, maybe there will be more accidents because, you know, everybody's going to have an autonomous car, and we only know what these kind of can you call them rogue autonomous vehicles? I don't think you can because they're so modern, so they're so guided, they're so precise even now. Somebody's there with them. They're inside the vehicle at all time. I know that doesn't stop all the wrecks, but my point is that there's really only a few truly autonomous vehicles on the road right now, and those are the ones that are licensed to be there specifically for testing.
Yeah, it's all R&D.
What's it really going to be like when there's, again, 70-80% of the vehicles on the road are autonomous, or 100% of the road?
That's tough to – I mean, that's so far out, though. I would say – the problems begin. Let's keep 20% is a good number. I would say that issues arise as soon as it hits even 20 or 15%, because the way that we've talked about this in the past, the way that we have predicted or speculated that autonomous vehicles would roll out would be in first city neighborhood, then city networks, and then maybe in some cases expanding regionally.
So small releases.
Small releases, yeah. Small releases, and the problem with that is it creates a boundary and a border. There's no way for every vehicle to automatically turn autonomous, so I still see a lot of accidents occurring, you know, at the border. Let's say Austin, Texas was somehow passed a thing where everybody has to drive an autonomous car, right?
Okay.
I imagine most of the people in Austin, Texas would be livid, because that's a lot of overreach, right?
Sure, yeah.
But let's just say it happens anyway. They caught everybody on a good day, and now they all have these autonomous vehicles. But
you had to pick Texas.
But what about the – maybe not the – but I picked Austin, so it balances out.
Oh, sure, okay.
But maybe they – or it doesn't matter. Any town, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Indianapolis.
I'm just ribbing you, okay?
All right.
Okay.
We're still cool?
We're okay.
We're all right.
No, we're cool.
We're work friends.
Yeah, that's right.
So the point being that Scott and I are actually friends. But the point being that the accidents will occur in that gray area where, like with most cities, a lot of people work in Austin or Indianapolis and live outside of it, where they wouldn't have to have an autonomous vehicle.
So you see the problem as being when a driver interacts with an autonomous vehicle.
Yeah,
that's the problem zone there. It's again going back to the human causing the error.
It's got potential.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it does. We've seen that too. I mean, when the autonomous vehicle counts on the human driver allowing them into that spot, but they don't because people are jerks. That happens.
Because screw you, yeah. Robot buddy.
Well, that happens. Yeah. So okay, but. I guess getting back to the stats and the figures.
Yeah.
I mean, the NTSB has chimed in on this. The guy's name is Christopher Hart, and he's the chairman of the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board. And his quote in this article says, "Driverless cars could save many, if not most, of the 32,000, but I saw a 35,000 number earlier. Could save most of the 32,000 that are lost every year on our streets and highways. Even if self-driving cars can only realize a fraction of their projected safety benefits, a decline in the number of available organs could begin as soon as the first wave of autonomous and semi-autonomous vehicles hit the road, threatening to compound our nation's already serious shortages." So, it's something that they're thinking about at the top levels here. Something that the NTSB is already, well, they've got their people working on it. What are we going to do here? What are we going to do about this? And I don't know if that's the right way to say it or not, because it's not really them that has to work on it. It's what are we going to do once this happens? This is where the ethical and moral stuff starts to come in, because as you may have already kind of gleaned from this discussion, is that this might open the door for some black market trade of organs or markets for organs.
Right. So here's the engineering problem. Let's look at it from an engineering perspective. Everybody needs a complement of specific organs, right? And the body has some built-in redundancy. You can get around with just one eye one kidney.
There's a few you can just tear out and not even need them.
Yeah, but you will degrade your quality of life.
Vestigial organs. Those are the ones I'm talking about. The ones that you don't really need.
Like a gallbladder?
Yeah, gallbladder's one. What's the other one? Everybody, appendix.
Appendix.
Appendix is another one. It seems like there's more than that.
Well, let's see.
Just kind of leftovers from, things that we don't need anymore. I think wasn't the appendix something that was supposed to aid in digestion of, bark or something like that?
Yeah.
We don't tend to eat bark a whole lot anymore, so I don't think that's necessary.
That's true.
I think that's the case. I read something about that a long time ago.
I think it was definitely for an herbivorous, plant-based diet.
And you can get by on one lung. It's not, it's not recommended. And you can get by on one kidney. And some people donate one good kidney and leave themselves with one in order to save the life of another. And that happens a lot.
But you only get one of certain other organs.
Yeah, like a liver.
A heart.
Yeah, heart's a good one. I mean,
a brain. Yeah. Not everybody gets one, apparently, most people do.
We talked a little bit about this morning. We were having a meeting here at the office, and we were talking a little bit about eye transplants. And I had thought that all along, I thought that eye transplants were happening all the time, but it turns out it's just pieces of the eye, corneas or something like that. They often go to a recipient, but not a full eye transplant, but they're working on it.
And the problem with all that is that we, the human species, have yet to build a technology that will, we have yet to effectively figure out a better large-scale method of organ transplant other than taking them from the dead.
Yeah, so the idea would be that we need to come up with something right away, pretty soon,
right?
A way of replicating organs. A way of growing organs, if you want to, maybe so that, there is no shortage. There is no, there's no deficit between the number of, people donating and the people needing these organs. You can grow whatever you're short, for this year, or this month, or whatever it is, and everybody then on the list is satisfied, or at least the number of people that we have now. We're not losing ground in that way.
So in some related How Stuff Works shows, we and some of our colleagues have explored the organ trade, which may strike a lot of people as strange to think of that. It's such a lurid, almost too weird to be true thing. But organ harvesting does still occur, and it's not, you know, I assume a lot of us have seen the movies where some regular, everyday guy gets a little wild partying with an interesting stranger and then wakes up with staples on one side of his rib cage, and then he's in a bathtub of ice.
Oh, yeah.
That might happen, sure, but what's far more likely to happen, we found, is that people in developing countries or impoverished people will sell an organ, like a kidney, mm-hmm. right, for a bargain basement price to an illegal broker who will spike the price and then sell it to a wealthy person who, for one reason or another, is not on the list.
Yeah. So when you hear the term organ harvesting, that's what we're talking about, illegal removal of organs from somebody and passing them on to somebody else. And it's not just, you know, these one-off cases, you know, where somebody wakes up in a bathtub of ice.
No.
This is also happening sometimes. This is real. This is you know, the down and dirty stuff here. If you pass away in a hospital, there's a chance that your loved one's organs could be removed from them without you really knowing that.
Right.
It happens, and it's rare.
Yeah.
It's rare. I want to point that out. It doesn't happen often, and when it does, I mean, they get caught eventually. They do get nailed on this.
And then
so it ends up being, you know, a bad news story. You know, it's bad press for the not only the surgeon that performed the illegal surgery, but also for the hospital and for the insurers and all that. So, you know, this always makes news whenever you find out that something like this is happening. And for good reason, the number is just astounding. It's thought that worldwide there's nearly 10,000, or actually there are 10,000 black market medical operations that are performed every single year with these illegally purchased organs.
Scott.
10,000.
Scott, I'm going to throw you for a loop here a little bit.
Okay.
There's a book, I know you're a big true crime fan, there's a book I have found in my research when we did the organ trade on another show. And no, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, I tried my best, but I wasn't able to avoid a pun about the Oregon Trail.
Nice.
Tracking these people down. They call it the red market. You know, there's like a black market for auto chop shops or something. They call this like the red market for the organ trade.
Really?
And there's a book that I would like to recommend to you and to anyone interested in this. It's called The Red Market, and it's by an author named Scott Carney, Carney.
Okay. Wrote that down. All right. The Red Market. Interesting. I had no idea that there was another term for it, because you always hear it described as black market, because it's a black market sale of something illegal, you know, something
right.
that they're not supposed to have, but they do. And the thing, you're right about it exploiting poverty in some situations, mm-hmm. because people, I mean, you offer somebody who's really, really down on their luck or has nothing, and they've never had anything,
yeah.
but they've got two working kidneys that, you know, somebody who's very wealthy would love to have, you know, just two towns over. And somebody kind of, you know, is the go-between, I guess, what would you call that, the liaison between them, and says, you know what, I'll give you $5,000 for that kidney. And that looks like a pile of money to somebody. But it oftentimes is far, far less than that we're talking about. $5,000 might be the price that they charge the wealthy individual to put it in. But the one that is being removed from, that's more money than they have ever seen sometimes or will ever see. But what do you do? And this is the moral and ethical thing, because now they're left with one kidney. What happens later in life if that kidney that they're left with begins to fail? Then then that was an extremely poor decision that was made early on.
Right.
For a relatively small amount of money. And that happens all the time. It happens way more than you think. There's an HBO documentary about mm-hmm. this, about the organ transplant trade. You know, it's I don't even know if you can call it that, really. There's I guess it's more like the red market stuff that you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. People can game these waiting lists if they're wealthier. You can travel to countries with lower restriction, less rule of law. You can also just go to different centers, perhaps, and get on multiple lists.
Now, here's the thing, Ben. This article, remember I said I don't agree with everything that's in this article?
Yeah.
I want to talk about something that this article brings up. There's a few things here, but let's do it after a quick word from our sponsor.
Good call, Scott. Good save on the sponsor break because I was getting into it. You know, you can tell because I start just gesticulating and gesturing about stuff, even though no one can see it.
Yeah,
except
you're
for
jacked
us.
About this topic. You're jacked.
Yeah, man.
If you could say that about organ transplant or thievery,
well,
I guess.
Well, it's fascinating. It's a hidden thing, but also it's incredibly controversial, problematic. And you mentioned before the break that you have some disagreements.
I do, because this article, there are paragraphs that start out with stuff like this, and I just can't get my head around this. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I just need to think about this more. But like this article or this paragraph here starts out with, the most straightforward fix would be to amend the federal law that prohibits the sale of most organs, which would allow for a development of a limited organ market. Now, you're talking about amending the Constitution, the federal law that prohibits the sale of organs. Now, this is something that we've had in the United States since about 1984. There was a law that was passed that bans the sale of organs in 1984. I mean, we're talking about, again, sale of organs for profit. I mean, you can't harvest the organs from somebody, sell them off to a medical school or, you know, whoever's doing these illegal surgeries. That means that, you know, if you're caught in the process of either selling or buying these organs, right, you're in big trouble. I mean, it's a U.S. law. That's something that's been on the books since 1984. They're saying, hey, well, we're in 2017 now, and these self-driving cars are going to greatly reduce the number of our pool of donors.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should consider amending that so that, yeah, you can sell organs again in the United States.
I just don't. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I'm torn, man, because half of – well, where are you – before I interrupt, where are you coming from?
Well, I mean, again, I think that – well – again, going back to the books that I read, this is probably where I'm getting a lot of this. So you have to, you know, weigh that into this decision. But I see this as, you know, turning into people again starting to illegally harvest their organs from people that don't necessarily want them harvested. I mean, the same thing happened when you could sell skeletons to medical schools for you know, learning purposes,
mm-hmm.
an articulated skeleton that you could put together and sell for a huge profit. That led to a lot of people offing other people to get their skeleton.
I could absolutely see that.
Digging up new graves so that they could then articulate that skeleton and sell it to a medical school. It's just some horrific things can happen. It's not saying that it will, but mm-hmm. I'm saying some things like that can happen. It's a consequence of amending something like this and saying it's once again, it's something that we're not going to frown upon quite as much.
Yeah, one of the concerns was that people's organs might be treated like, quote, fenders in an auto junkyard.
Mm.
Okay, I see a couple of different angles to this. One, my cursory instinct in a world where everyone is treated fairly is, hell, man, it belongs to you. Do what you want with it.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to be like someone who tells somebody not to sell their car radio, but in this case, the thing is a little more complicated because no matter how much liberty we want to give people or ownership over their own bodies, what we run into is the fact that the same people who are gaming the system as it exists today are more than capable of gaming the people who would consider selling their organs.
Yeah, and I want to get this out there. I'm not against somebody who's willing to give up a kidney or willing to give up whatever organ that they can to help somebody else out. That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is that somebody could take that from you. Somebody could then see that as a potential profit for them. Right now, in the United States at least, it's impossible to – well, I shouldn't say impossible. Mm-hmm. It can be done, but it's a lot harder to sell – an illegally begotten kidney or liver or lungs or whatever. I mean, questions will be asked most places. If you show up at the door and you've got, you know, the big cooler in your hand, you know, with the big red or the big red cross on it, you know, you might want to find out where you got that human heart.
That's true.
But in a situation like this, like they may say, like, well, you know, someone gave it to someone. Someone decided that you know, it was worth $2,500 to me or to them rather, and that's how I got this kidney.
We did the deal right outside.
Yeah, and that happens. I mean, it happens right now in other nations. I just don't know. I mean,
You can find entire villages.
We haven't seen it here in a long time.
We hope that we're being pretty clear about what those concerns would be. Gaming a system to take advantage of people at a massive profit margin. That's the other thing. At least now in the illegal market, the profits are massive. But, of course, again, this is not the majority of all these operations, right? Mm-hmm. And there are, to Scott's point, there are wonderful people around the world who are donating to save a sibling, right?
Yeah.
Or a spouse, a relative, a loved one. They're doing it of their own free will, not because they are being threatened with being crippled financially.
And in a safe, responsible way. And in a very, I guess, monitored and clean, you know, facility typically. I mean, you're going to find that, you know, it's done in the appropriate way. And think about this. I mean, people, they don't only give up, like, kidneys and, you know, whatever else they can, you know, give up from their body that would help somebody else, you know, whether it's blood plasma. Could be
bone marrow.
Yeah, it could be a sperm donation, could be an egg donation.
Sure.
People have been doing this for long, and I have no problem at all with any of that. I really don't. What I have the problem with is when you then become, like, a target for somebody.
Right.
That they can then, you know, profit from that. So it's not so much – again, we're still talking about, I guess, the red market trade. It's still not – because if it's regulated, if it's something that people are willing to do, again, fine. That's fine.
But that's the other thing, man. A lot of times people hate regulation. So someone will be – okay, here's my concern. Here's my – like, bottom line concern. Ladies and gentlemen, I think many of you can agree with me. The We Buy Gold industry – has exploited a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not illegal, right? They're doing exactly what it says on the tin, at least here in the U.S.
Sure.
For people outside of the U.S., what we're talking about, you may have this kind of thing in your neck of the global woods, but we have a thing here in the States where people will offer to buy old jewelry or, you know, rings, coins, things like that, anything made of gold, and they'll buy it for a relatively low price, usually a really low price.
Sure, pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and then they will melt it down or sell it by weight for what it's actually worth, plus a profit.
But you go into that knowing that you're not going to get the best deal, really.
Right.
You're willing to for that trade-off, because you just want rid of the item and you want a few dollars in return.
Right, and it's legal, so you're sacrificing profit for convenience.
Yeah, but I mean, are you doing that for an organ?
What if there is a We Buy Kidneys, We Buy Livers?
Well, you know, it may happen.
Come on down to Crazy Dr. Mike's.
Right away, I don't like it just based on the name of the place.
Crazy Dr. Mike's.
All right, so Ben, I got a couple more scenarios that I want to lay out here.
Okay,
And I can go through these kind of quickly,
sure.
but there's three more points here that, again, varying degrees of do I agree with this or not. And first one, no, just to tell you where I stand on this one, but they're asking, what would an ethical fix to an organ transplant shortage look like? So the idea here is that this is kind of crazy. This, you may have mixed feelings about this too. So, you know, when you go into the DMV, as we talked about earlier in this episode, and you have to check the box to say that you want to be an organ donor. Well, what if instead of that, there was a presumed consent rule?
That you had to opt out instead of opt in?
Exactly right, yeah. So, you know, when you check the box, that's saying, no, I don't want to be. But if you don't bother to check the box, then you're automatically in. And that would lead to a huge increase in the number of people that become donors, because right away, a lot of people just don't simply want to do it, or they don't take the time to read through the paperwork and fill it out. They would, but they don't.
They're just flipping through, where do I sign?
Yeah, and so right now we have an opt-in system, but this could become an opt-out system, which would then open up a larger pool of potential donors.
Completely disagree.
Yeah.
And here's why. Because somebody – you should always read what you sign in full.
Well, just hang on for a second. You're saying you disagree with me, or you disagree with the article?
I disagree with the article.
Okay, same here.
You and I are on the same page. Here's the problem. A lot of people – I'm not saying the majority of the world or anything, but a lot of people, due to their spiritual beliefs, they can't have their corpse violated and it's seen as a violation. So maybe it's saving someone, but it's saving someone in a way that fundamentally betrays what the unknowing donor believed.
So they need to enter the afterlife whole or complete.
Right.
Not missing anything.
Like they can't be embalmed or they can't have, stuff
going
taken
back,
out.
Well, going back to the Egyptians, they would remove all their organs, but they would keep them with them in the tomb. So it was like they were there, but separate.
Yeah.
Well, that's just kind of a strange thing, too. So, but here's one thing we're neglecting in this argument, and this comes down to like the final point here, I guess, is that if we're talking about autonomous vehicles anyways, driving's going to be safer. So those people that never opted out or in, rather, it won't really matter, because what we're talking about is autonomous vehicles saving lives. So this is maybe not the place to go. According to this article, this is maybe not the way to do it, because it won't really open up anything brand new.
It'll be increasingly irrelevant.
Exactly. Well, yeah, as autonomous vehicles come online. That's right. The thing. So it kind of discounts that whole argument anyways at a certain point. The next thing would be that there is a this is interesting. Benefits packages for people that do donate organs. So, there's some examples, or an example of this. In 2008, Israel instituted a benefit package for living donors that included full wage reimbursement for 40 days and up to 5 years of paid expenses for a variety of services, including health and life insurance. So it's like a health policy that you get for 5 years, plus you get time off of your job, whatever you do, with benefits, with pay, 40 days. But, you're being incentivized, I guess, in order to give this organ. It's not just a kind gesture, something that in the past, normally people would just say, well, my cousin needs a kidney. Of course I'm going to give him one of my working kidneys. Otherwise that person's going to die and I can live with one. Hopefully someone will, help me out if that ever gets into that situation later in life if you've only got one left. But, the idea to, amend, these organ transplant laws, I guess, is an interesting idea that, you do incentivize it in some way and offer up packages like this. So what do you think about that one?
I don't know, man. Okay.
It's a long pause there, Ben.
Yeah, because I don't want to be hypocritical here. The idea of allowing, a family member to transplant, I think that's, of course, that's great, but the idea of...
Well, I'm going to interrupt for 1 second. Mm. Family members receive priority for these organs when they were donated. So you could say that you wanted to also give it to a cousin or nephew or whoever it is.
Yeah.
They would get the they would get the organ, but you'd still get this benefit package.
Okay. While I completely agree with the... with the ability of the donor to donate, to specify the recipient, the issue that I see here is, again, people seeing it as a way to kind of go on the dole,
Yeah.
I don't know without – we're literally talking about a foreign country. Things work very differently there. They have a much smaller population, right?
Sure.
And I don't know their wealth distribution or their demographic statistics very well. So I don't know if we can compare that to the U.S. Is it a good move on their state's part? It is, I think, important to take care of people after they have what surely must be a traumatic operation.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what the value is of the health and life insurance and the other services that they offer, whatever that may be, medical services, of course.
Right. Do they already have some kind of healthcare system for everyone?
Yeah.
Or is it a situation where people who did not otherwise have affordable access to a doctor would just have to sell their kidney and then get free doctors for life?
Well, it says paid expenses. I guess they're covering the charge, the cost of that. And using Israel as our example, if you want to look at what happened there. Now, we said that in 2008, that's when that happened, when they amended that law. And the number, this is going forward a couple of years, so they had the program in place for a while. But between 2011 and 2013, compared with the same, the previous 3-year period before that, from 08 to 11, the number of organ donors increased by 67%. 67%,
well,
that's huge.
Of course it did. I mean, look at all the stuff you're getting if you donate an organ.
Well, I understand, but I mean, it has proven results, you know, that it does increase the frequency, I guess, with which people would say, yeah, I mean, of course I'll do that for either my relative or a stranger.
It does. My hesitation is because I feel like I would need more information to really, really make up my mind. So the first one, don't like it. Second one, need more info.
Well, a paid donation system like this would be a lot more complex to set up. So it would be a difficult thing to enact, I guess. And this one doesn't take into account the autonomous vehicle thing. I mean, it's simply on its own. This is its own thing.
It's addressing a current issue.
It is, but it may kind of balance out what we were going to see, you know, potentially, you know, if these stats hold up.
And as, you know, Scott, as you said earlier, we do need to remember that while these vehicles are on the horizon, while there's potential to be there, we're looking at a pretty long time horizon here.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, there's a lot of barriers in the way of something like this really working. And I know this Slate article, I'm sure they're just throwing out some ideas. Like, here's what we could do. But I got to say, I just don't agree with, you know, amending laws that are in place that, again, make you a possible, I don't want to say target. I keep wanting to say target, but I guess that's kind of the way it would be, right?
Yeah.
There could be some nefarious things happening if you were to put a dollar amount, attach a dollar amount to all these organs,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody who is in that game could potentially see you as a mark that, you know, they see the dollar signs in the eyes when you walk by. You know, like there goes two usable kidney, or at least one usable kidney that I could have.
Oh, you want to tell scary stories? What about going to Vegas where you can put up a kidney as collateral?
Oh my God.
Which would totally happen.
You know what? You know, it's funny, you think you would take it to that level, but I think it might go to that. It might get to that.
If that occurred, it's like a high roller thing.
It who knows? Maybe it's happening now.
Maybe there's somebody right now in Vegas who's like three kidneys deep and going double or nothing on the liver. Oh, that got dark. But the three kidneys deep. But the but the idea that we should also mention is that as societies grow closer and closer to a real practical rollout of autonomous vehicles, right, and reducing deaths due to driver error, it doesn't exist in vacuum, this kind of evolution. Other forms of technology will advance as well, including the possibility of 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it's going to be possible to print some sorts of organs.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't think that's going to happen before autonomous vehicles are more widespread, but we have to remember that, you know, we're a pretty smart bunch of we do our best.
Well, look back at like the Jarvik 7 heart.
Uh-huh.
You take a look at a photo of one of those things, and it's a great big plastic, and I think there's metal in there, but it's a big pump, really. Of course,
it's a
heart, but it's very clunky in the way that it looks. I mean, I could totally see something like that being 3D printed, but what we're talking about are other organs that are soft tissue that have a function. You know, they create bile, they filter things.
Right.
So they have to be able to regenerate themselves. They have, you know, there's all these other factors. It's not just a mechanical heart, you know, because heart is easy enough to see that, you know, it can be a pump that just functions, that just operates. I could almost see a lung operating the same way with some external device that makes it move or function.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm no doctor. Clearly.
What?
I'm clearly not a doctor, but what I'm saying is there are certain things in the human body that you can understand could be more mechanical than other things. So printing biological material, like 3D printing a liver or something like that, I see that as being a long way off. I really do. I don't know how it would function in the same way that, you know, a mechanical heart is so easy to understand. It's easy to understand how a pump would work, or how it could work. I don't know. I'm not a full believer in the fact that they're going to be able to 3D print that type of thing. But then again, I'll probably eat my words in 4 years from now. Happens so fast.
How great would that be, though?
Yeah,
I
want it to happen because that would eliminate, you know, the, what was it, 123,000, I said, on the waiting list?
Yeah.
No more waiting list. You just get it.
And another thing that's accelerating is people will probably live longer, too.
Yeah.
And wear out some parts once their warranties kind of expire.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it strange, though, that this all spawns from our discussion at the very beginning of autonomous vehicles and how safe they are, really.
Right.
What a strange unintended consequence that it's going to create an organ shortage.
And who knows what other unintended consequences may arise from a world without drivers. So we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. Let us know what you think. This is a very interesting one. We've got a lot of questions. Have you ever driven for Uber or Lyft? I think that's how we got there today, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, thematically and not physically. Have you yourself received an organ transplant, or have you donated an organ, someone in your family?
Yeah. Are you on a wait list? Because that's got to be a nervous time.
That's very serious.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And
can't imagine.
If so, or regardless of your personal experience, we'd like to know what you think about this topic. It seems set to affect, over time, a significant amount of people, and we have to remember that other parts of the world may well have autonomous networks, regional autonomous networks, before the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So will they be a precursor, or will it be apples and oranges?
You know? And will we be able to see the same type of thing happen here? I mean, is it going to be something that we can learn from?
Mm-hmm.
But really, more than learning from anything, I mean, we can kind of see this coming. You can forecast, if it doesn't happen to this extent that we're talking about, then there will be some form of shortage from this. There will be. So because of the whole driver error thing and the 94% number, and again, the astounding 35,000 a year that are lost on our highways. So there's going to be a result, a consequence from this. And I'm going to use the word consequence. We said earlier on we weren't, but I think I might have even used it a couple times. But we do see something that's happening. So what are we going to do to be able to regenerate organs, or how are we going to do this in the future? How is it going to happen?
How are we going to pull this one off?
I'm really interested. I'd love to know what people think, you know, like kind of morally and ethically about this too, because that's what we struggle with here. So, or we are struggling with that today. Mm-hmm. It's a strange topic anyways. I know, I understand that, and it kind of got a little bit off track, but it's all based on this autonomous vehicle thing. I mean, it's coming.
And that book again is the Red Market. Scott, I have a copy. I'll bring one in for you.
Thank you.
So let us know on Facebook. Let us know on Twitter. We are CarStuffHSW on both of those. And if you would like to take a page from your fellow listeners and write in with something that has nothing to do with this weird ethical supply and demand problem that we're speculating about today, if you have a topic that you think your fellow listeners should know about, write to us directly. We're all ears, and you can find us at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.